Hi, you've tuned in to the Lovely Travels podcast, where we talk about all things travel and adventure. My name is Emma Lovell, also known as Lovely, and I have a mission to visit every UN-recognised country in the world while raising awareness for mental health. Join me as we revisit some of my past adventures, speak to fellow travellers and interesting locals, all while following the journey to 195 countries. I'll be joined soon by my co-pilot, Darius, in Germany. And sometimes we're even going to hit the road together. Make sure to join in the adventure by following me on Instagram, Lovely Travels. You can also join our Facebook group, Lovely Travels Community, and learn more about us at the website, lovelytravels.com. But for now, it's listening time. Travel vicariously along with us.
Hello and welcome everyone to the Lovely Travels podcast. Special bumper episode this week. Emma is talking to Kent. How do you know Kent? Who is Kent? Tell me about Kent.
Well, today is International Day of People with Disabilities, and so we wanted to have this week a bit special. We don't usually do two episodes in a week, but it was really important to... We had Julie Jones on from Travel Without Limits on Tuesday on our regular day. And I wanted to follow on. So Julie has a son who has a disability and travels with him and now works in the industry and shares information about accessible travel. But I also wanted to speak to somebody who lives with a disability, and Kent McKelvey has a disability himself and travels, so he fit the bill.
Yeah, wow.
But yeah, how we know each other, I used to pet sit his cats when I ran my pet sitting business, he and his lovely partner Susan. So and some of those times, yeah, they were traveling, or they were yeah, he actually plays wheelchair tennis and goes to tournaments overseas as well, which is really cool.
Wow.
So he shared a lot about that. But, yeah, he actually joined our Facebook group, Lovely Travels Community, and he private messaged me one day and said, hey, Emma, are you going to talk about accessible travel, you know, travel for people with disabilities? And I said, absolutely, but, you know, it's not really my place to just talk about that because I don't have a disability. So I wanted to talk to somebody with a lived experience. And so I said, you know, Kent, shall you come on? And he obliged. So, yeah.
I'm pretty sure it's safe to say he could probably kick my butt at tennis.
Yeah. Well, it's quite different. People who are good at tennis, you know, the, I guess, traditional tennis that we've seen that is, without a wheelchair, when you get into a wheelchair, but even for wheelchair users, that doesn't mean they necessarily can just go and play tennis, because his wheelchair for tennis is different to his wheelchair day to day. They're completely different. So he shares all about that. I mean, also the fact that you're trying to wheel a wheelchair, which actually isn't as easy as one thinks. I've done it a couple of times, and there's like balancing and stuff that's involved in that. And yeah, you can't just jump in a wheelchair and any old wheelchair and give it a go. They're very customized to the person. So it's a lot more to it than people think. You know, then comes into it air travel, trying to get your wheelchair on there. Sometimes they just want to give you the one in the airport. That is completely inappropriate for a person. Anyway, Kent can speak to this. I just said I don't want to speak about, yeah. We talked about all of that, so I learn a lot, and you will too.
Yeah. Again, as always, looking very much forward to this conversation, and yeah, let's hear what Ken has to say.
Welcome to the Lovely Travels podcast, Kent. I'm so happy to have you here.
Thanks for having me on. I look forward to it.
So actually, you approached me. I started the Facebook group because of the podcast and because of my Instagram, and you actually asked me if we would be approaching the subject of travel, people with a disability traveling, or accessible travel And I said, absolutely. But I wanted to invite somebody who actually had lived experience. So
yep.
It's really good to have you. But I'd love to hear a little bit about you as a person and tell me a bit about you.
Okay. Well, I don't know if this is going to be a visual podcast or just a audio podcast, but generally people can't tell I have a disability if I'm not in my wheelchair, except if they see me walk. But I had an accident 25 plus years ago, had my back broken, so a vertebrae was shattered and my spinal cord was compressed. It wasn't severed. So I can still walk. I've just lost some function and sensation through the lower parts of my legs. And because of this, for any long distance kind of walking, I'll use a wheelchair. So just for fatigue and pain management.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, can I ask which vertebrae?
The T12.
Oh, I did T11L1. I had a snowboarding accident in 2009, so I managed to skip T12. You picked it up. Well done.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not pleasant. Not fun.
No. Do not recommend at all. So, yeah, I spent 3 months in hospital doing pretty intensive rehab and for the last 25 years been continuing with that said rehab. So it's an ongoing thing. So, it's a good thing that I enjoy doing exercise because it's really important to keep my mobility and to enable me to do the things that I enjoy doing. So if I didn't do those sort of things, I wouldn't be able to get out and do, you know, all the stuff that I enjoy to do. And the activities that I did prior to the accident that I I don't do anymore because it's difficult, there are modified ways of doing them or finding different ways to enjoy them. I used to do a lot of hiking. Obviously can't do a lot of hiking these days because hiking trails aren't wheelchair accessible and spending that much time on my feet is just it's not good for me.
Yeah.
But I can go kayaking. It's exactly the same thing. It's just a different way of doing it. So.
Yeah, different angle, different view.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
But so, you play tennis and you play it quite well. Was that something you played before your accident?
I played as a junior up till about the age of 14. And then, yeah, I was a teenager. I wanted to try something else and I played baseball from about that time up until I was 24 and I had my accident. And then I was also at the time of the accident starting to do some triathlons. So I did a lot of riding, a bit of running, swimming, obviously. After the accident, I started riding again. I had my accident on my bike. I got hit by a car. Wow. 12 months after the accident, I was back on the bike. I actually did some competitive cycling in a multi-disability competition, and then I was looking for something else to do, and I had no interest in doing wheelchair basketball, and I was volunteering or doing some work at Sporting Wheelers and Disabled Association, and they needed someone to do the driving for the Queensland Wheelchair Tennis Open, which was being held at Mooloolaba. So I had to pick the athletes up from the international airport and drive them up to Mooloolaba. And I'd never seen tennis before. I'd never even heard of wheelchair tennis. And because I'd played before, I was like, oh, I'll check this out. And saw it and went, oh, I want to have a go at that. And that was in the January. And I didn't get to actually try until I think it was August that year. And one of the Queensland players that had played at the tournament also played basketball, and I was at watching the basketball one night, and he said, oh, when are you going to come out and have a hit? And I went, oh, well, when do you go? And he's like, oh, we play at UQ on whatever night it was. And I went, okay, I don't have a chair or anything. He's like, no, we can organise that. So I went down and had a hit, and I actually hadn't hit a tennis ball in when I'd stopped when I was 14. So at this stage, I was 27. So it'd been quite a time. The shots were still there. I'd obviously needed a lot of work. I'd never used the chair prior to that either. I'd left the hospital on crutches, and the chair was never an option. And so I had to learn how to use the chair as well. But I got out there and I had to go, and the guys that there said, "Oh, we're going to play a tournament in a month. You should come and play." And I went, "Oh, okay, no worries, I'll do that." So I went to my first tournament after being on the court 3 times. And I've been playing pretty steadily since. So that was in 99.
Wow. And so it's an adapted chair. It's a different chair to what you would use on the street.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, so it's got a greater angle on the wheels, for quicker turning and manoeuvring on the court. My chair sits a lot higher. It's got a wheel on the back to stop you from tipping over, and it's a tighter fit. And there's a bunch of straps on that I have on me to sort of keep me nice and tight in the chair. So
yeah, wow.
Yeah,
wow. It's different. It's a different feeling as well. You hadn't used the chair, but when you it's going to be a different experience of the type of chair to that you are going to use on the tennis court.
Absolutely. So notice like if I get out of my, when I've been in my tennis chair playing, and then I get back into my day chair to move around, it feels really awkward and ungainly, because they're built so differently for different purposes. And my day chair's used for cruising around, and because the chairs are built so differently, and my day chair's not as manoeuvrable, and it just feels so awkward in there for a little while. My day chair's lightweight and made to be easier getting around. It's not heavy or anything. So, the tennis chair, if I could spend more of my time in my tennis chair, I would.
Yeah,
okay. I just feel so much freer in it. Like I can move faster. I can, I'm more agile in it, and all those sort of things. So,
is the net the same height?
The only difference, other than the chair, the only difference that we have in wheelchair tennis is we're allowed 2 bounces.
Okay.
So for singles, we play on the singles court. Doubles is on the doubles court. The net's the same height. Points are all the same. So we're allowed to the 2 bounces. We don't have to use 2 bounces. We don't have to wait for it to bounce a second time before we can hit it. If I get to it on the first, I'll play it on the first. If in the air, I'll play it out of the air. So the second one just gives us a little bit more time to get to the ball if we need. We can't move sideways. So we've got to travel bigger distances. So it just gives us that much bit more time. So.
Absolutely, and I'm sure you're still hitting it pretty hard and fast.
I do okay. not as good as the top guys do, but I mean that's their full time job, so
Yeah, you'd hope so. So, you were saying before Mooloolaba. So you currently live in Queensland.
Yes,
are
in
you
Brisbane.
From Queensland?
Not originally. I was born in Adelaide. Many years ago. My dad was in the army, so we moved around a lot. So every 18 months, 2 years, I was moving to a new town, school, whatever. And dad discharged from the army in 1982. So his last posting was to Brisbane, because that's where he wanted to settle. So he requested to be posted to Brisbane. So we moved to Brisbane in 1982. And then even since then, I've moved quite a bit. So mostly just within Queensland. I did do a stint down in Adelaide for a while, and I don't know if I could really call it living overseas, but, spending 6 months in the States in one spot, but sort of travelling out from there for that period. And, so I've kind of always been moving around, and actually bought a place 12 months ago. We've been here just over 12 months now, but I never thought I'd actually be buying a house, but here we are. So
yeah, so travel's kind of just in your life.
Yes, and I get itchy feet. Like it doesn't happen so much these days, but I would always find I get restless and I'd want to, and it'd be around the 2 year mark. I'm like, right, what's next? Where am I going?
Yeah.
But yeah, it, as I've gotten older, it doesn't happen so much, but certainly did when I was younger because that's what I was used to. So.
Well, thankfully now, you, especially at this time of COVID, I'm glad you've got that itchy feet out. I think we've all got itchy feet though.
Oh, yeah, and I think that's because we're being forced to not. Well, but we're not being forced. I mean, I can't travel overseas, obviously, and I can't really travel interstate. Queensland is a massive state and has so much to offer. So now would be a great time and opportunity to go explore that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And so how do you find travel in Australia accessibility-wise?
Pretty good. I mean, we're a fairly new country. Obviously, a lot of the older buildings and stuff aren't always accessible. And I do have that advantage that if I'm aware of access issues at a place, I won't use the chair.
Yeah.
But I have that choice. So it's not everyone has that choice. So if you're in a chair and that's your only way of getting around and you rock up at a place and it's not accessible or the access is through the back doors, through a back alley, it's not always a pleasant experience. And some people, and I've done it myself, where I've just gone, you know what, I'm not going to bother. I can't get into the building in my chair. I'm just going to miss out on that. So you can miss out on things because of limited access, but Australia's pretty good. I haven't really had a bad experience. I know others that have had horrible experiences with airlines or, accommodation and things like that. But, I haven't really had any terrible experiences with it. And I think I've had one time where I was at a hotel in Melbourne and I was sharing the room with another I was down there for a tournament, so I was sharing with another player and he's in a chair all the time. And the bed was a little close to the entry into the bathroom and he couldn't fit his chair through it, and we just went to the reception and they went, oh, we'll fix that, and they just came in and moved all the furniture aside so he could actually get into the bathroom easier. And once he was in there, everything was fine, but, there was just that small hiccup. And, most places are pretty accommodating with that sort of thing. So as long as you tell them to, prior to arriving, that you need an accessible room or you're getting on a flight travelling with chairs, they're pretty good. So
is that frustrating, though, having to always have that additional step of doing the research or contacting beforehand? Or
I mean, travelling, everyone that travels does a certain amount of research anyway before they go somewhere. It's like, oh, what are the activities I want to do? So obviously for me, I've got a little bit of extra to consider. So if I was wanting to go on a ski trip, I have to research and find where can I get accessible equipment to go skiing. But there's also organisations out there to help. And, and I'm at an advantage. I've worked in a sporting organisation for people with disabilities. So I kind of know where I could go to all right, I want to go skiing. I can call that person. They'll be able to give me the contact details of someone that will be able to get me accessible equipment. And I also have a bunch of friends all over Australia and the world that I'm like, I'm going to be in Canada in, December. I want to go skiing and, I just contact someone I know in Canada and they'd be able to give me the contacts for where I can get equipment. So,
yeah.
And that's, I think, one of the advantages of playing tennis at the level I have. I've met players from all around the world. So I just get on Facebook and send them a message and say, hey, I'm coming to town sort of thing. Not necessarily to catch up with them, but what do I need to consider for access or anything like that? So.
That's really good. I mean, and it's great that you have that network. I think some people don't, and they maybe don't even approach, don't think that they can travel or wouldn't even try because they just, it's just, it seems like there's too many barriers.
Yes.
It's the same.
Yeah. I definitely see it within the community that people will not do something because they see too many barriers in the way. Whereas most of the time I'm like, well, that's a barrier to be broken down. So
yeah. Do you ever have that challenge of, like you said, I mean, so you would have to travel now with the chair always just in case?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you ever have that challenge of people kind of seeing you walk and then seeing you use a chair and being like, why don't you just walk then?
Yes. And it's funny, I get it from the disability community and I get it from the able-bodied community. They're like, I get some funny looks, someone will meet me and I'm standing up when they meet me. And then the next day they see me in the chair and they're like, oh my God, what happened? I've had other people with disabilities say to me, why do you use a chair? You can walk. And I'm like, well, it's walking has its own set of issues. You know, if I do too much of it, I actually start to lose more sensation.
Yeah.
So, which I did for years. I didn't use a chair. I backpacked through Europe and didn't use a chair, and I'd actually thrown away my crutches and walking stick by that time because they just got in the way, and I went, I'm just going to walk. And I walked for days of walking and just accepted that's how things were going to be because I have this injury and it's not going to change, so I just accept it. And it wasn't until after I actually started using the chair and we went to New Zealand and we were doing a few day hikes out to the glaciers and, you know, travelling down the west coast of the South Island. So we're going to Fox Glacier and Franz Josef and all amazing experiences. And I'm walking out there and doing all that and I was in the shower and kind of just washing down and then I'm like, I can't feel stuff when I'm touching the top of my legs. And I'm like, I can't feel that. That's not good. And all right, I've done too much walking, spent the next 2 days in the chair and everything started to ease off. So yeah, it's a consideration that, I need to sort of think of, like it's balancing that walking, I want to keep that functionality, but it also has its own problems that it can actually cause too much damage if I actually do too much of it. So,
yeah, for sure. I mean, I wanted to ask, like you said, you haven't had too many terrible experiences, which is great, but how do you feel like travel could be made more accessible, or how could travellers be more considerate? Other travellers be more considerate?
I think one of the perks of being in a chair is we always get boarded first on flights.
Yeah.
And always you'll hear grumblings about why are they getting on first, or it's because it takes us longer to board. If I've got to wheel down to the plane and then I've got to transfer onto an aisle chair and then, which I can't move by myself, I've got to have someone push it, and then they take me to the seat, and then I've got to transfer onto the seat. And, that all takes extra time. It's not like I can just walk down, walk to my seat, and sit down. So,
and you need space too to do that. You don't want people around you with all your bags and stuff.
Exactly. I have friends that are notoriously late, so they will end up having to be the last board on the plane, and then it holds up the flight. And people are like, oh, my flight's being late. And, it's like just having a little bit of, I guess, empathy about, it takes a little bit of extra time. But
100%.
Yeah. But, I've seen people messing around with loading their bags into the overhead locker that take longer to do that than it does someone to transfer out of their chair. So,
Yeah.
I don't stand there grumbling about that. You're holding up proceedings, people.
And so do you have to now travel when you go for tennis tournaments? Do you take your own?
I take two chairs.
Two chairs, yeah, okay.
Yeah. So it's always it's a sight to see me going through an airport. Because I'm in my day chair and I have my tennis chair in front of me, and on top of that I will have my bag. So I have a very large racket bag that has a couple of rackets in it, but then all my clothes and tools for my chair and spare tubes and a pump and all those sort of things. And it sits on top, and I'll just push through, you know, pushing my day chair with one hand while the other one's on my other chair. And people are like, they'll stop and stare at me. And, you know, I often, do you need a hand? I'm like, no, I'm all good. Yeah, you know, I've done this before. And
do you like the offer of help? I was having a discussion before about this, and I think for somebody who doesn't have a disability, having that conversation.
I don't mind people offering, yeah. But at least offer. Don't just help.
Yes.
Do not. Yeah. Don't just come up and think that I need a hand.
Yeah.
I've had experiences, not so much traveling, but just moving around Brisbane. Brisbane's a hilly city. You know, I've got to push up hills sometimes, and someone will come up and just grab the back of the chair to help me. And you know, my chair is set up that it tips quite easily.
Yes.
Just because when you're going over gutters, you want to be able to flip the front wheels up so they don't catch on stuff. So they grab the back of the chair and it'll tip me backwards. And I'm like, you wouldn't go up and grab someone's arm and help them up. It's just like, don't do that to someone in a chair. Just go up and go, do you need any help? And if they do, they'll say, yes, that'd be great, thank you, or no, thanks, I'm right, you know, but don't just do it.
They're very light. I mean, I've sat in one and they can tip very easily. Like, they're very mobile and, super light. And, my God, it just leant back a little bit. There's a real art to it. Don't people think?
If I have my backpack on, so, you know, a little day pack, and I'll just put it on my shoulders like everyone else does. If I sit up straight, and lean back slightly, my chair will tip over.
Mm-hmm.
But that's how twitchy it is. So, I did it in the lift one day. I had my bag on my lap. I went, I'll just flick it onto my back, and I put my hands up above my head, and the chair tipped backwards, and I slammed into the wall. So,
yeah.
But yes, I think that's like going back to your question about other travellers. If you want to feel better about yourself about helping somebody, at least offer first.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a fit guy, and I'm probably fitter than the majority of people out there. So just because I'm in the chair doesn't mean I'm more capable. So
yeah, and it's polite. Ask someone what they need, if they need. Yes. You know, you maybe observe for a second too and probably think, if you've got two wheelchairs and a tennis bag and another bag, yeah, I'm guessing you've probably done it once or twice. Hi, Harper. Ooh, we've got a kitty cat on the podcast, kitty cat. It's beautiful. I know your lovely partner, but I also have had the pleasure of pet sitting your wonderful kitty.
Yes.
Hey, babies.
We you have.
Because when
have you met Luna?
I have met Luna.
Yeah. She's a little black eyed at the moment. She's wanting to play. So.
But yes, you guys go away, and I would come and visit the pets.
Yep.
So you said you haven't really had any bad travel experiences. I mean, generally, what has been a great positive travel experience for you, or just a trip you loved? You know,
I think the trip that I've probably loved the most, and it was pre-accident, so it doesn't really sort of count in the disability conversation. But my first trip to America was probably the most amazing one that I've ever had, and it was maybe because it was my first trip. But just I went over there and I worked in a summer camp for a period for the summer, obviously, and then met friends in New Orleans, and then we're like, well, we need to get up to St. Louis, and then you know, then we're flying from St. Louis to Minneapolis, and then we're going to visit friends in northern Minnesota, and we're like, oh, how are we going to get up there? And one of the guys didn't have the flight from St. Louis to Minneapolis, and I went, how about we buy a van and we all drive up to St. Louis, you drive up to Minneapolis and meet us, and then we'll continue on our journey. So we bought this van and then road tripped around up through the South and the Midwest and then along the northern states and the Great Lakes. So, and it was just amazing. So,
and you've now been, you go to the States for tournaments now? Is that why you go?
Last time I went was for a tournament. Well, was for a tournament, but also to catch up with friends. I have some very good friends over there that I've made. The first one of them I actually met here in Queensland, and then when we're over there, he's like, "Oh, you should come and visit." And so we did, and I've met all these other people through that. I went back in 2018, and that was the first time I'd been back there since 2002. So I was. If I'm going over there and I'm going to play a tournament, I might as well take the time to go and catch up with some people as well. So,
yeah.
But I think, and they want me to go back over again, obviously. But I'm like, yeah, there's so many other places I want to go visit. And I think once all this crazy COVID stuff lifts and we can start traveling overseas again, I'm going to start making my list of places. Like, I wanted to go to Japan since I was in high school and I've never been, so I'm going to go to Japan.
And I know the ski fields certainly are very good with the accessibility.
Yes.
So I don't know about everywhere else, but I have a feeling it is very good.
Yeah, oh, I mean, I know quite a few of the Japanese wheelchair tennis players. So, you know, other players that have gone and played there, and obviously, when you're at a wheelchair tournament, everything's going to be great for access.
Yeah,
actually, it's not always.
irony.
Yeah. A tournament I played in Malaysia back in 2018 that was not fantastic. But, you know, you just kind of roll with it and pardon the pun.
Diary of will love that.
you kind of adapt and find ways to get around the access issues. So,
and I love that word, using that in sport as well. And I learned from doing the work with Disabled Winter Sport Australia is that adaptability is such a nice adaptability.
Yeah. Like,
you know, yes, this place isn't necessarily, you know, in the, you know, not using the words like disability friendly. It's like, is it accessible?
Yeah.
Or is it adaptable? Can we adapt? Or how can I adapt so that I can do the thing that I want to do?
Yeah. And, I mean, just from my experience, it's a lot easier for me to adapt to a situation because I'm lucky enough that I'm able to stand and move about. Certainly there are issues for other players where, you know, bathrooms aren't accessible or and I know one of the some of the places in Southeast Asia where they still have the, you know, the toilets where you've got down over a hole. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, there's no way in hell I would be able to do that.
Yeah.
Because I don't have that ability. Like, so what am I going to do? Is that my only option? You know, so going to somewhere like that would require me to do a bit of research to sort of see, am I going to be able to get accommodation where I can stay where I'm going to have a Western toilet to use, or, you know, what am I going to have to do to be able to use the amenities, sort of thing. So, and, you know, I'm sure I would find a way if that was my only option, but, you know, for someone that doesn't have my functionality, it's not going to be an option. It's like they're not going to sit on a hole in the ground. So sorry that I kind of went to an unpleasant place, but you know.
No, but these are things that we don't, that you take for granted.
Yes.
When you don't, if you don't have a disability, or if you haven't interacted with someone with a disability, and as places, you know, even in Sydney, I went to a restaurant and I did the right thing. I called and said, my friend has a wheelchair, and you know, are we able to access? And they said yes. Well, there was a step to get in. That was one. Yeah. And then I booked a table, and yeah, they put us at a high table with high chairs. And I'm like, well, he's going to have to get out of the chair. So yeah, he's there by that point. So I'm like, can we have a lower table, please? And then he, well, we're like, where's the bathroom? And it was down a set of stairs, and yeah, then stair to get in. For him to go, he would have to go around the block into the side street. And
down the back alley, yeah.
And
I've been places in Brisbane, or you ring up and go, oh, is the place accessible? And I'm like, yep, there's no steps. And you're like, excellent. And you rock up, there's no steps, it's great. You just wheel straight in, and the tables are so closely packed together that you can't actually get through. You know, someone standing and walking, they, you know, they can turn sideways and squeeze through, you know. But, you know, you get brushed if I'm against someone's back, or, excuse me, if I'm in the chair, I'm not going to fit through there. Like,
it's... Yeah, absolutely. Or there'll just, there was still like, or there'll be one step still, and you're like, there's not stairs, but there's a step.
Yeah.
You're in a wheelie thing.
Navigate. And, you know, some steps you can get up and down easy enough. But, again, not everyone can do that. Someone in a power chair can't do that. You know, someone in a manual chair can, because they can flick the front wheels up and they might be able to pull themselves up using the door frame, or, you know, there's, or just getting enough momentum that you can hop up the step. You know, going down's a lot easier. But, if you're in a power chair, you can't do that. Or if you're using a walker, or, you know, something like that, it's... it does make it a little bit difficult, and traveling, I guess that's where the unknown is. Like moving around Brisbane, it's like, I know how to get from here to here, and the most accessible route to do that. It might mean it's longer for me to get there because I've got to avoid stairs and stuff. But when I rock up in a foreign city, I'm like, I don't know where the accessible route was. And in KL, when I was there, so after my trip to the States in 2018, I did one tournament over there. I got back. I was back a week, and then went and did three tournaments in Malaysia. One was out on Labuan Island, which is just off Borneo, and then two in Kuala Lumpur. And I thought, Kuala Lumpur's a fairly modern city, and all the streets and the gutterings there are built for the monsoon, so they're really deep.
Yeah.
So they'd obviously done some work on some footpaths, and they'd made the from the footpath down to the road crossings really accessible, nice ramps, but you get across the road and there's no ramp to get back up. So I'm like, oh, what am I going to do here? So I was pushing along the road with the traffic till I could find a spot to get back onto the footpaths.
Yeah, that's not cool.
And, you know, some people will go, oh, it was a horrible experience. To me, it's just an experience. So it's like, it's all part of the joy of traveling for me. It's like you take the good with the bad. So, well, the bad with the good. It depends on how you want to look at it. But
yeah, and it's just going to be your willingness, I guess, to navigate those situations. But it's unfortunate when you're forced to, but. In traveling, we're all probably put in situations where, I mean, I've dragged suitcases along, you know, got to a beach, but I got to drag the suitcase along the sand and be like, maybe I should have a backpack. That would have probably been a smarter idea. But
And you don't know what the situation's going to be like till you're actually on the ground. I mean, I assume that KL, being a large modern city, would be more accessible. And some of it's great, some of it's not so great. But it's the same with Sydney and Melbourne and Brisbane, and you know, cities in the US that I've been to. So, yeah, I mean, some places are great, some are good, some are not great, but, you know, you kind of, I guess if I go expecting the worst for access, I'm always going to be surprised when I find something good, so.
Yeah, okay. That's a nice way to put it.
Don't assume that when you rock up at the town in northern Scotland that is, you know, 1,000 years old, it's going to have ramps and stuff everywhere, you know.
No.
It's going to have flagstones and cobbled streets and, yeah, which are difficult to navigate in a chair. So.
Yeah.
So be prepared for it.
As well, I tell you.
Yeah.
And you're in the streets of Italy and you're like, oh, gosh, this is a terrible idea. I'm glad I didn't do this.
Oh, yeah. I went to Pompeii and I'm like, I'm glad I didn't do that in the chair. That would have been horrible.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just thinking of those streets as well. I was like, oh. Yeah.
But there is equipment that I can attach to my chair so that I have an attachment that I put onto the front of my chair that lifts the front casters up off the ground, and the wheel is the size of a pram wheel. And so it can roll over those sort of things. So it just makes it easier. So it makes the chair a bit longer, but you know what? I can still roll across rocks and cobbled stones and all those sort of things. So
I love it. So is there any place that you just wouldn't go, like you just like, it's too hard basket, can't be bothered?
No, I don't think I would say never go. If I've got the right equipment, anything's going to be accessible. Like I can put off-road tires on the chair and, you know, put the freewheel on it so I can go on, you know, tracks and stuff if I was in Serengeti or, you know, I don't think if I've got the equipment to adapt, it's really not going to be an issue. But
it's your willingness as well, isn't it? Because, you know,
yes, exactly.
Like Kurt Fernley did Kokoda.
Yeah, on his knees. Yeah,
I was there and I was like, oh man, like I struggled. I thought of him a few times. I was like, bravo, man, bravo.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so if there's the willingness is there, yeah.
And I spoke to Julie from Travel Without Limits, and she was talking about there was a lady who was a wheelchair user, did Kilimanjaro.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I know a vision impaired man who's climbed Kilimanjaro. And again, I was there and I thought of him. I thought, oh gosh, okay.
Name wasn't Brian, was it?
Sorry?
His name wasn't Brian, was it?
No, his name is, oh, I'm just going to write now. Gary Horn, he's American.
Okay.
So,
yeah. Because with my work at Sporting Wheelies, you know, lots of people come through there with, you know, but don't let anything really stop them. They'll just get out there and, yeah, but the guy with a vision impairment came in. Yeah, I'm climbing up Kilimanjaro, so I'm training for that. I'm like, that's awesome.
Yeah. I was, you know, it's where there's a will, there's a way. And, you know, I found it challenging, but, you know, I had the full respect and it was like, but you adapt because, you know, I think because I have vision going, I can't imagine doing this in Queen Anne's Sea. Well, if you have no choice, you're going to find a way.
Yeah, exactly.
And he did, and he loved the experience. And, I think it's brilliant. And I love that there are people willing to help. And actually sometimes in those places, you know, there are more people around to potentially help, and it just might be that you need to hire an extra porter to be your
guide. Yeah. Because I know – you know, some guys in chairs, you know, they'll do treks and it'll be, you know, four guys will just pick them up and carry them over a bit, and then they'll wheel as much as they can, and then someone will pick them up and lift them up a section, or, you know. So having that willingness, there's always a way around stuff. So, and, you know, I can be a little bit stubbornly independent at times, so I don't know how I would go with having someone carry me in my chair. I'd probably just go, you carry the chair, I'm going to walk. Why do I have that option? So, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. So do you have one travel tip for us? And it can be a general travel tip or just a travel tip?
Well, I read your questions And I'm like, what's the travel tip? And I think as someone that travels with wheelchairs, have spare tubes with you and know how to change a tyre.
Yeah.
Because you're not going to always be close to somewhere where you can go into a bike store and buy a tyre or get someone to change it for you. So have it there, because if you blow a tyre and you're relying on that chair to get around and you can't pump it up or replace the tube in it, you're stuck.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and it is surprising how many people that use chairs don't know how to do that.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And definitely for somebody as well, we talked about, Julie and I before, that some people might be new to using a chair, and it might be that they still want to have those travel experiences as they absolutely should be able to have. So just that's great to have things to think about that you might not have thought about previously, that now that you have a chair, you're like, well, yeah, go take a spare.
Yeah. So I always carry tyre levers with me, a spare tube, and a multi-tool with all the Allen keys and stuff on it that I need. So if I need to tighten stuff up on my chair or change a tube or whatever, I can do it. So, I generally carry a manual pump, but there's one of my friends recently got a little compressor that is the size of a cigarette packet. They can put these tyres up to 120 PSI. I'm like, I need to get me one of those because sometimes carrying a big pump around is just not practical. Like if I've got a compressor that's the size of a cigarette packet, I can just put it in my bag underneath my chair and I'm not even going to notice it's there. So, and then if I need it, I've got something. But if I don't need it, it doesn't matter. It's not taking up a lot of room. So
that's perfect. I love it. I love you. I love that there's no limits, and look forward to seeing where you head off to when we're allowed to.
Yes. Thank you so much. Well, I can't even go and play tournaments in Australia now. It's frustrating. So they cancel them all.
Maybe you'll get to see more of Queensland then.
Yes. Well, that's the plan. So I'm thinking, yeah, I want to do a road trip out to Longreach. So I might just have to load the car up and head west.
I love it. Thank you so much for your time.
And no worries. Thank you.
Really appreciated it.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
Well, thank you, Emma. That was a great chat between you and Kent. Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I just want to, again, remind people that it's the International Day of People with Disabilities. So that is, as Kent mentioned, you know, in terms of how we address people, address the person first. So we don't say disabled person, it's person with a disability. Always trying to think about, you know, these are people and they want to travel too. And it's, you know, that's why we did this episode. It's about accessible travel and just taking a second to think about somebody else's worldview. And leading with the person in terms of what do you want, what do you need, how can we support you, as opposed to what we sort of think they might need or want or whatever. So like someone like Kent is really awesome at articulating what he needs, and let's widen that conversation and hear from more people like Kent.
Sure. If you heard Kent's story and feel inspired and want to share something of your own, challenging or not so challenging, we'd love for you to get in contact with us.
We have some amazing people actually in our group, in our Lovely Travels community. So I'll be really love to hear from them after these episodes and to hear their perspectives, because there's a lot of, you know, there's so many different experiences. Everybody's unique. So to keep sharing those and keep hearing those stories would be great. So please keep them coming.
Definitely. Definitely.
Yeah. We know, you know where to find us. So check the show notes. Just search Lovely Travels, LOVELLY. You'll find us. And we can't wait to hear from you.
That's right. We're waiting for your calls.
Or emails.
or emails, or instant messages, or smoke signals. Rock carvings are also accepted.
We love it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.